This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, BFM 89.9. It's 6 a.m. on the 4th of April 2019. You're with The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng and joined by Lin Mark and Shariz Abdullah. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Julian.
Good morning, Julian.
So, as usual, as this 6 a.m. hour, we usually bring you some pretty serious discussion and some not so serious ones. What do we have for this morning, guys?
That's right. Well, this morning, the stats are apparently out with regards to anti-vaxxers. Government has just brought it out, and the group is apparently very small. So if this is really the case, should we be less concerned about them, right? But those numbers, even though they're small, if we put it into perspective, maybe there is something there for us to worry about. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
Exciting stuff. And also on a very light note, nearly 70,000 deaths in the UK could have been prevented if people sat less. What an optimistic discussion we have for everyone this morning.
Too much sitting.
Yeah, I feel guilty
around.
Right now.
I know. And I say this sitting in this very comfortable chair where I will be sitting for the next 4 hours. So we're going to be taking a look into some new research that basically underscores the fact that we need to be more active in order to improve our health.
Wonderful. Going back to cavemen or cavewomen living. And also, if you'd like to join in the discussion, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio as usual. Coming up next, we'll be talking about whether two-year-olds need career advice. And to take us there, here's Living on the Edge by Aerosmith, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 is 6:07 in the morning and you're with The Morning Run. Julian, Lin and Charts here with you. It seems that parents are having career talks with their kids way too late. A report from charity Founders for Schools suggests that kids as young as 2 years old can start being introduced to potential jobs. I think this is like putting a little bit too much stress on the kids at too early an age.
I am so worried right now, Julian, that you react that way. And, you know, I'm a very confused parent. I'm a very worried parent. And when I read articles like this, I tend to just, you know, I get gullible and
start
questioning my parenting skill.
Pour out your emotions.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, if you're like me, I mean, we're always thinking, you know, whether or not we're giving the best out, you know, we're providing the best for our children, right? I mean, you come up with so many things from, you know, should they start reading early? Should they be, you know, able to read at a certain age, be able to swim? I mean, I don't know, a million and one things. But again, I get gullible when I read articles like this. It's like, oh man, should I? You know. But then looking at you guys, the way you guys react, I'm questioning everything.
Well, we're not exactly the model parents because we don't have.
No,
we're not parents.
We're not parents. I'm not saying you guys are wrong, but you know, let's go on.
Okay, so maybe as someone who was this 2-year-old child, perhaps a little bit more recently than either of you,
a 2-year-old child with a mustache, maybe.
What?
I'm just kidding. Where I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. Go on.
I don't have a mustache in real life. Okay, no, but I remember basically, I think my biggest ambition at 2 was to live in a Barbie house. So perhaps perhaps that lack of career advice at 2 is why I am I'm in radio and not a doctor or a high-flying engineer.
That's a noble profession, I have to say.
Which one, radio or doctor?
Barbie.
Barbie, okay.
I thought it was quite fun. I still wouldn't mind living in a Barbie house. But yeah, I do feel that kids at 2 years old, they don't really care about the future. They have no concept of what it's like to be an adult. So really putting this kind of starting to funnel them into potential careers at 2, I feel, is just a way for the parents to project their ambitions onto the kids. Mm-hmm. So I think you should just step back and let your kids be kids.
But doesn't that very argument also mean that the kids that they have no notion of their own future mean that the parents should continue to nurture them towards the right direction in the form of career advice or career parenting?
Yeah, but I think you're like 16 years too early because at 2, food, most kids have barely gotten a handle on bathing themselves, much less what they're going to be in the future.
Exactly.
So, you know, you have another 15 years to inculcate that sense of ambition for what you're going to be in life. I think 2 years old is just a little bit too early to start.
Okay, so I'm going to put that hat where I'm just going to deliberate whatever you guys are saying. I'm going to start, considering all those options. But for me, yeah, like you said, whether or not I do have that sense sometimes as a parent, whether or not I'm imposing my sort of own personal vision of my kids, right? Which I think is not right. But I think that's also a part of me when I deal with my kids, is just about providing as much options as possible and see which, what sort of aptitude, trying to identify what aptitude they have and what I think they could be good at. And with a hope, which could borderline imposing your values, that's something that they could be good at.
Also, I think there is the issue that over the last at least one or two generations, the aspirational careers have been quite stable in a form of doctors and these are all stereotypes, obviously, lawyers, accountants, engineers, they have been very aspirational, highly demanded and desired. But times are really changing, right? So that we've come to a point right now because of technology, we don't know what the aspirational jobs are for the future, what kind of skills that you would need for a future. So perhaps that supports the idea that it's too early to sort of career train your kids.
Yeah, but and you've also seen prodigies as well. I mean, those who are really good at playing drums, for example, at the age of 3 and 4, and that's probably the career path. And so there is introducing something early could really sort of jumpstart them into a very bright future.
Yeah, I think because as a parent, you basically just want your kid to be able to be the best that they can be. So I can see the pitfall here where parents will fixate on, as you said, Julian, the traditional high-flying, high-value jobs like doctors, lawyers, engineers. But the reality is that in 20 years, by the time these children who are like 2 years old now, by the time they're in university, we have no concept of the jobs that they will be looking at or the career landscape that they'll be looking at. So it's, I guess right now it's more important rather than starting to tell them, okay, do you want to be a doctor when you grow up? Maybe say, okay, here are some skills that you could acquire that maybe encourage in your children that could carry over into all those different jobs in the future.
Yeah, that's probably more important. The basic skills of conversation, of dealing, interpersonal communication, dealing with each other and dealing with yourself, right? How do you deal with stress? And things like that could be possibly more well-equipping for the children.
Thanks for the advice, guys.
Not that we are advising as experts. Yeah. So
seriously deliberating right now.
Take this with a pinch of salt, Sharit. All right, we'll be back with more discussion after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and that was Red Hot Chili Peppers' Under the Bridge. We're sitting too much. In UK, 70,000 deaths could have been avoided in 2016 if people were more active and stopped sitting around on their behinds for long hours every day. And we are saying this as we are sitting down. Some of you are standing up. Well done.
Yes.
Well, not some, just one.
So maybe I think I was a little bit alarmed by that statistic, 70,000 deaths. So now I'm standing up just for this talk set. So it's quite interesting. I think the researchers in this study calculated the proportion of cases of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and a handful of other illnesses attributable to sedentary behavior in the UK. And I think we all know that activity is good for us. But I mean, realistically, if you work an office job, what's the chances of you also being able to have an active lifestyle? I know that it's very difficult to go to the gym on a regular basis, for example, just working here.
Well, this is not even about like not going to the gym, right? This is just about sitting down and perhaps, that fad from a few years ago of standing desks at the office, perhaps that could be something that we could think about. And it's died down, actually. People are no longer buying standing desks and no longer having standing desks at the office.
Yeah, and there's also those jobs where, you know, they don't have an option at all to even stand up. For example, if you're a Grab driver, I mean, for hours and hours, that's what you do when you're just stuck in the car. And it really makes you start to, you know, consider, you know, whether... I mean, but it's going to happen soon that the SOXO that they are, you know, that they're supposed to be getting is important now because of the nature of the job. I mean, SOXO, right, is the one where you get medical sort of a benefit from.
Yeah, it's an insurance, yeah.
Yeah.
What? So?
So what I'm saying is that they don't get SOXO and as...
Grab drivers.
Okay. So it's an occupational hazard for them. Mm. And so just thinking that in this coming June, I think that's going to be implemented. So I guess in some ways, good.
Do you think there's always a choice that you can make? Because even if you have a sedentary job or if you're a Grab driver, you can still do that thing where you stop every half an hour and get up, right? Get up and do something, walk around perhaps. And I always like to do this experiment in my head. Like, why have we evolved this way, right? I used the Darwinian questioning behind this. Like, why do we like massages? Why are we ticklish? Why have we evolved in such a way? And really, when you go back to when we were cave people, we didn't have chairs, so we actually squatted or we stood. Okay. We run. We didn't actually create a chair and sat down a chair.
So should we blame IKEA for this in some ways?
IKEA didn't come up with the idea of a chair.
Of course.
They just made all our houses look the same. All our homes look the same. Right?
Wasn't there news a little while ago that squatting was better for you when you go to the toilet?
Oh yeah.
Was that scientifically proven?
And squatting arranged your whatever, the small intestines, large intestines. I don't know. My biology is really bad. When you sit on the toilet bowl, you're basically making it harder for the matter to come out. Right. Nice conversation for this early in the morning. I'm sure it's a good thing we're not talking about this at lunch. Yeah.
Absolutely,
so sitting down, standing up.
Yeah, I do. Because speaking of scientific research, because as you mentioned, Julian, standing desks were quite a fad at one point. Actually, even in the BFM offices, we had standing desks at one point. We don't have them anymore, mostly because I don't think they really caught on. But actually, I don't think there was ever any scientific research proving that standing desks were better for your health. And there is this conflation between sitting down and a sedentary lifestyle. I mean, you could, as you said, Julian, you know, just because you sit down for, you have an office job that requires you to be at a desk sitting down doesn't mean that you can't be getting up to walk around. So that is a relatively active lifestyle. What they're talking about here when they talk about sedentary is, I think, people who sit down for more than 6 hours a day, at least. Hmm.
Yeah. That's crazy. And that happens when you watch Netflix as well. Right? You can binge watch something. And
but you also lie down
go all the way.
Watching Netflix.
That's true. Nice. I think lying down is healthier. All right. We're coming up to the 6:30 news. And here's Black by Pearl Jam, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. And that was Princess of the Universe by Queen. And right now we are talking about the anti-vaxxers. Apparently there are only about 1% of anti-vaxxers in Malaysia, according to the Ministry of Health. So are we looking at this from a glass half empty or half full viewpoint? It's not half, it's 1% or 99%, right? There's actually 1% of people who don't believe in vaccination, or, oh, well, there's just 1% of people. Is it dangerous to have 1% of people not believing in vaccination?
I mean, if you look at the figure, I mean, 1% of the population is 300,000 people. And then if, you know, those are parents who believe it. I mean, again, number one, the question is whether or not how accurate these statistics are. That I have a question to put up for. And the next thing is that, does this represent just you know, the family who don't believe in vaccine, and then what about their children? So can the figure multiply? But 300,000 is still an alarming number in comparison if you were to just use that 1%.
Yeah, so I think that putting it as just 1% of the population really minimizes the problem. And because there are going to be people who say that, oh no, it's only 1%, 99% of the population believe in vaccines, so we don't really need to be worried about it. But I feel like it is, 1% is still a lot. That said, 1% is good in a way, because it means that the percentage of anti-vaxxers is small enough that the government should be able to take measures against it. And the other thing that the health ministry pointed out is that we don't have an anti-vax movement, an organized movement like they do in the US. So the people here who don't believe in vaccines tend to be individuals or small communities. So it should be rather than targeting a movement, you are dealing with a much more disorganized, scattered population. I think that will be easier to tackle overall.
Yeah, and I'm also afraid of the contagion effect because 1% can spread if it's a contagious disease. Because we hear that measles are coming back, right? A spike up in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Philippines because of the anti-vax group.
Yeah, so again, there was several weeks back is when people were questioning, there was that issue that was raised whether or not children should be allowed to be in public school if they are not vaccinated. And I think there's been a lot of discussion there. I'm looking at 300,000, and I think it's not a small number. I mean, if maybe half of them were to be children, that's 150,000. Again, it is, these are contagious disease, and every parent should, both parents have rights. It's just a matter of, something that we, these figures should provide more, more, how do you say?
Support
when, government are making decisions, really.
Mm. You mentioned the discussion over whether unvaccinated kids should be allowed in schools. There's actually some news in the BBC today about this because in the US, a Kentucky teen actually took the state to court over his not being allowed to play basketball because he's unvaccinated. And this is because there was a disease outbreak in the school. And ultimately the judge sided with the health department. So they said that the 18-year-old doesn't have a right to play sports because this decision is best for the community. You're trying to preserve the safety of an entire community.
That's right. We don't live alone, right? And certain actions that of ours can harm and endanger the entire community and entire society. So I don't know about rights of parents, the rights not to be anti-vaccinated, to not to be vaccinated, because it will affect other people.
Yeah, but it's not just the other people. It's those who have, the victim especially. I mean, there were cases of diphtheria several weeks back down in Johor, and those several kids have died as a result, both Johor and Kedah. And, these are avoidable diseases. So that's the point. I mean, and parents make that choice of not wanting to vaccinate, and as a result, those kids are made to suffer. And I know that there's many other ways that you could probably, you could probably die on, but I think it was just a matter of when it's avoidable, whether or not government should look into the rights of the children as well.
Yeah, but I think the religious institutions are also the problem because they... A lot of times they want to go the direction where, it's something that is divine, right? So the Catholic Church, according to the same article from BBC, has told its members it is morally justifiable to use these vaccines, though it wants alternative treatments developed without using cell lines of illicit origin.
Yeah, so I think they're saying this because the teenager in question in the US was objecting to the vaccine based on his religious beliefs, because the vaccine was derived from aborted fetal cells. So because as a staunch Catholic, he doesn't believe in abortion, so therefore he refused to take the vaccine. So this isn't, we see religious arguments against vaccinations here in Malaysia as well. That said, Jakim has come out multiple times to say that vaccines which contain, let's say, a pork derivative, it is still all right to take them. They've come on BFM before to have this discussion with our Health and Living show, because it is ultimately for the greater good of the society. And really, the portions in a vaccine are quite minuscule. So it's a matter of spreading that information and allaying the fear, because that is what it comes down to, right? It's when you're objecting to vaccines based on religious reasons, it's because you are afraid.
Yeah. Also, I think there are also people who don't believe in vaccines because they think it's unnatural and they want to go through more natural remedies for that. And that's dangerous as well. Well, let us know what you think. Are you worried about the 1% of anti-vaxxers in this country? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll be coming back with more discussions. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. You're with Julian Lin and Sharat Abdullah. And that was Guns N' Roses by Live and Let Die. We're talking about anti-vaxxers. Did I say something wrong?
It's Live and Let Die by Guns N' Roses. You said it the other way around, Julian.
Really? Okay, yes. I'm sorry about that. So we're talking about anti-vaxxers, and I guess that spurred a lot of responses out there from you guys. Thank you so much for all your thoughts. Shall we read out some of them?
Yeah, so we have a tweet here from Paul Lau who says, a newborn is not old enough to get vaccinated. If measles comes back, they are at risk. Not vaccinating affects more than those who don't vaccinate. It's very true because, children like newborns, as well as children who are immunocompromised, sick, cancer sufferers, they cannot be vaccinated. So they rely on the herd immunity of the people around them in order to avoid catching the disease. So if there is one child who is not vaccinated and who catches the disease, it can spread to these unfortunate people or kids who physically cannot have a defense against them.
Yeah, I think the other people who have written in are also taking the same line of pretty much Saw says that anti-vaxxers are a plague. I think that's a good way to put it. Most parents know preschools are a cesspool of diseases. Children are dirty.
That's right.
Kids are dirty.
It's true, isn't it?
You can institute like those disease. What do you call that?
Triage.
Good hygiene practices at home. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I mean, there's just no way to prevent those germs from just creeping into your house, isn't it?
Just to play the devil's advocate a bit, because I've read articles that's also quite bad. Over-sanitization is also quite bad because it removes the good germs from your hands and your body and reduces your overall immunity. So it's okay for kids to get down and dirty a little bit, play in the mud, play in the earth. But vaccination and viruses are totally different ball game altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it's the adage, right? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yeah. So yeah. Things like colds and flus will just build up your immunity. It's like how parents deliberately expose their kids to chickenpox sometimes at one point.
Is that right? Is that the right thing to do?
Because when you have chickenpox at a younger age, typically it's less severe than if you catch it when you're older. So it's better to have chickenpox and it's, fairly mild rather than have it actually be life-threatening if you catch it as an adult.
Well, I'm not going to deny that allowing kids to get down and dirty, in school, that would sort of boost up the immune system. But I think coming home, they just need to be a quick reset before they get dirty again. You know what I mean? Just get themselves clean, especially when you come across contagious disease like foot and mouth diseases. And there's also text from from Diana, who is also worried about anti-vaxxers, and what she's saying is that as much as she wants other people to have their freedom in how they live their life, but it's not right when other people's decision to cost her.
Yeah, actually, this is the societal effect, right? The greater good effect that you should take care just to make sure that society is well taken care of. And that happens with taxes as well. Okay, pay your taxes apart from getting the vaccines. All right, we are coming up to 7 a.m. And after that, we will be talking about the international markets. And to take you there, here's a Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.